known by the message of an angel, may, by his passion and cross, be brought to the glory of his resurrection, through the same Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM, Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas. Catholic radio for your soul on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
And millions are under winter weather alerts as more snow hits parts of the western U.S. Rescue efforts continue in San Bernardino County, California. Mountain residents remain trapped under several feet of snow, and officials are warning it could be another week before they're able to reach everyone. For more news with a Catholic perspective, visit EWTNnews.com. I'm Teresa Tomeo, and The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi starts now.
The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes, you are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Jerk is an androgynous term. I mean, it can fit both. Would it be jerkette? And then jerko would be the guy? I don't know. Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program here, Doctor Is In. This is the Monday variant e-person. Not email. Nope, nope, nope. Linguistically, that's insensitive. E-person Monday, where I try to at least take some of your e-persons, your what I used to call missives, but you can't say that anymore because that's, you'd have to say missives or personives or something a little more generic. Missive is, again, it's like mail. It's linguistically insensitive. So, I'll get to those in a moment. But right now, as always, the opening monologue. Let us say that you have a teenager. Or if you've already raised your children, can I say the chances are pretty good that you once were a teenager? Okay. Since more of you probably were once a teenager than have teenagers, let's use that group. As a teenager, you went up to your mom or your dad and you said, I've been doing a lot of thinking. I believe that you are right in the kinds of standards that you wish to teach me, in the limits that you wish to put on me, and how you discipline me. I think that most of the time you are right. I agree. I'd say about 90%, 90% of the time. And I want you to know, as long as I agree, I certainly will obey. I agree. Or maybe I should say, I don't find it too hard to follow. I can accept. Maybe that's a better word. However, mother or dearest father, there's about a percentage of the time, and that varies, it does vary, where I don't agree. And when I don't agree, I'm going to do as I please. I decide whether I wish to obey on the basis of whether I agree or not. Now, you should be grateful that you have a highly obedient son or daughter, because 90% of agreement, of acceptance, that's off the charts. Now, again, of that 10% that I don't agree, I'm going to do what I want. And I decide what that 10% is. So overall, the package is pretty good, and you should be pretty happy. When I speak to parents, I'll ask them, this is usually to Catholic groups, is that an obedient child? They almost all say no. I say, why not? 90%? Come on, what do you expect? And then the most common answer is, yeah, it's 90% because he decides he agrees with it. It's not a matter of we have the authority, so therefore he will obey it because he has respect that we know what we're doing. No, it's a matter of in his 15-year-old mind, he goes along with it, so therefore he'll obey us. But that's the only determinant, because he agrees, not because he recognizes our authority as his parents. And furthermore, he has authority above ours because he decides which things he'll obey and which he doesn't. He thinks he's smarter than we are, more experienced. Let's draw a parallel. Have you not heard people say, and hopefully you haven't said, I'm Catholic, but I don't agree with everything that the church says. I can't buy this contraception thing. And I think same-sex unions are perfectly fine. And by the way, I've seen some surveys that the majority of Catholics think that. Now, again, I don't know how many of them have stepped inside a church the last 38 years. Are those faithful Catholics? Now, if they argue, but we agree with the church. We agree with the church about 90% of the time. So really, we are pretty faithful Catholics. We're not talking 50% agreement. We're talking 90. All right, I agree. Or this idea that the church says we're morally obliged to go to Mass on Sundays. They didn't do away with that. Sadly, that happened during COVID. I think there's a lot of church folks that think that was a premature move. But that said, no, you still got to go to church on Sunday. It's just the smallest of obligations. If you call yourself a Christian, a Catholic, and yet you say, I can't give God an hour of worship on Sunday out of 168? Whoa! Well, I just don't agree with that. I mean, we're busy on Sundays. I work 6 days a week. The kids have soccer on Sunday morning. It's just very difficult. But I agree most of the time. Well, then you are basically that 15-year-old adolescent that went to your mother and said, I'll obey you when I agree with you, and I won't obey you when I don't agree with you. You have no authority over me other than the authority I give you. And sadly, I would say that characterizes the majority of Catholics out there. And I guess I would say, please don't let it be you. I'm not going to sit here and bemoan all those other people. I want to look at me. And I want to say, I don't want to do that. I don't want to say, the church says this. The church says that on a holy day of obligation, I need to be at Mass. Well, you know, wait a minute. It's during the week, for heaven's sakes. Come on. I work for a living. I'm on the radio an hour a day with five breaks. That's tiring. It's exhausting. But it's my commitment. So I don't go. Why not? And I really don't want to. I don't think I have to. I think the church is unreasonable in commanding me to do that. See what happens? Church says, children are a gift from God, and don't practice artificial contraception, which basically says to God, if you want to give us a kid, I don't want it. I know better than you do. Well, the church is wrong. And if you look at the statistics on those Catholics of childbearing age, yeah, you're in a minority. Once I decided that the church has the authority, she has been given the authority by Christ, and that teaching authority is not dependent upon the holiness of its bishops, its priests, even its pope. It has that authority because Christ gave it that authority. So therefore, it is my mother. And if my mother says, this is what's best for you, this is what we are obliging you to do, do it. And if at age 15 I say to my mother, nah, I don't agree with you. What do you know? I don't want to do the same thing. I don't want to stay an adolescent in my faith where I say to the church, well, you know, I've looked at this and I'm just afraid I don't buy it. Okay? I just don't buy it. Now, I'll go along with you if I do buy it. But if I don't, and fortunately for you, church, that's only a few things. It's only a few things. Other than that, I'm doing pretty good. And I got to tell you, from my informal experience and talking to people, unfortunately, I believe that's where many, even in our pews, are. And I want to be beyond a teenager in my faith. Dr. Ray.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, EWTN.com/Family Celebration.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Within the people of life and the people for life, that's who we are, the people of life and the people for life, part of our self-identity. The family has a decisive responsibility. This responsibility flows from its very nature as a community of life and love, founded upon marriage and from its mission to guard, reveal, and communicate love. The family and marriage has a mission to guard love, to protect it from false forms of love, from false uses of people, using people and abusing them. It also is to reveal love and communicate love. This is part of the family's and marriage's purpose. You reveal love to the world. You know, people say, oh, marriage is just a piece of paper. That's baloney. This is you saying to the public, I'm loving my wife and my husband and my children till death do us part.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Do you have an insurance plan that pays for everything, even things you don't believe in? There are options. You can join Solidarity HealthShare, a faith-based health-sharing community. Plus, Solidarity HealthShare can save you money with prices starting as low as $384 a month for families.
Call to see how much you can save. 844-398-9399. That's 844-398-9399.
Joining me, I'm Dr. Ray Grandy. Program Doctor is In, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Co-production of the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications. I found out in a recent visit to EWTN, I was informed, didn't know this, that the Affiliate stations are now numbering 600. I've been living in the 440 range for quite a while. But they corrected me. They said it's up around 600. That's cool. So I would think with 600 stations, I'm thinking my listening audience is over 200 now. Well over 200. That means one person every three stations. I think I can do that. Heck, you got to have the receptionist in some of these places in the office there. So he or she's listening, right? At least, well, I mean, they don't have to listen to my program. They can turn the radio down when it's on. But some of them leave it up. I know that because I visited the stations and I hear me. They don't look like they're listening, though. All right. To your e-persons. Dr. Ray, I was wondering if you could give me some insight. Now, see, I'm insulted already. You were wondering if I could give you some insight? I can give you some insight. Now, I'm not saying it's accurate or not, but I can give it to you. On whether repressed memories are valid. My daughter is receiving trauma therapy from her experiences as a nurse, including caring for severely ill COVID patients in a hospital setting. Now, Mom says, all of a sudden, now I would want to know what all of a sudden means, her behavior has been erratic, including strange text messages, I'm assuming again, to Mom and or Dad, getting these messages, cryptic, perhaps hostile, and claims of repressed memories from her childhood. You know what repressed memories are? The theory behind repressed memories is that the psyche pushes them down because they were too traumatic to remember. It was a protective device. And through proper therapy and exploration, these memories can be brought to the fore. Now, that's the theory behind supposed repressed memories. She's not yet said what her repressed memories are, but I can't for the life of me figure out what she thinks happened. I have tried to research this and have gotten mixed answers as to whether they are considered believable by the psychological community. Repressed memories exploded onto the scene, I believe, back in the early 90s. Reader's Digest did an expose, an article, on how therapists were uncovering all of these notions, these harms, these traumas that now adult people or even older children experienced when they were younger, earlier years, and they buried. They buried them in their psyche. Too traumatic to remember, to think about. As a result, there was a lot of this. The media is very powerful in convincing our culture what the pathology du jour is. Very powerful. I've seen it over my 40-plus years of being a shrink. I've seen when the media gets hold of a certain diagnosis and runs with it, it dramatically explodes the diagnosis in its frequency. And repressed memories just ballooned. So, how real are they? Probably the highest profile repressed memories, some of you listening in Washington, were familiar with that preschool program in Wenatchee, Washington, where these children, these little preschoolers, were essentially reporting all kinds of abuse. Satanic, nasty, calculated, all over the place, abuse. And the owners of the preschool were imprisoned. And what they found later was that the repressed memories were implanted. Not deliberately, but just through questioning and through believability. This can be done. There's memory research that says you can, quote unquote, implant a memory on the basis of how you ask questions. It's a phenomenon that's very real. They also found that in the research, the bulk of quote unquote repressed memories was found in a small percentage of therapists. A small percentage of therapists were looking for repressed memories and they found them, whereas other therapists didn't find them. I remember, this is back in the later 80s, I was working at a mental health center, and there was a colleague who talked about how often she had experienced this particular phenomenon. And it wasn't repressed memories. It was multiple personality disorder, as it was called in those days. She saw it all the time in kids, all the time, all the time, all the time. And I said to her, all my colleagues have seen virtually none of this in kids. And yet you say you've seen it repeatedly. That's all I said. She got upset. I think a parallel can be drawn to repressed memories. I believe, if I'm getting my details right, in the Kavanaugh hearings, the woman who came forward to accuse him of these things, these memories came out during her therapy. If I remember correctly, she was given credit for these accusations that just happened to come forth as she was in therapy as an adult. What is the conclusion? And I would say, do some more research on this, look it up, because I don't think it's as mixed as you think it is in the therapeutic community. They are to be looked at very cautiously. It is much more likely that when a person has a traumatic experience, it is seared into their memory. Much more likely. I suppose, given that the human mind is capable about anything, that this could happen. The question is, does it happen anywhere near as much as it has been reported? I don't know about your daughter, and I certainly can't say anything because you're seeing a therapist. However, I have had parents call me and say, we just got accused of A, B, C, D, and E by our grown child, and I'm devastated because she won't have anything to do with us. And I'll say, is she in therapy? Yes, this is where this all came up. Interesting, isn't it? Interesting. You know the word iatrogenic? It means doctor-caused. And in therapy, any good therapist knows, you got to be careful. Because you can plant what you're looking for. If you suspect something in the way that you explored or the way you ask questions, you can draw it out. I would want to know from your daughter, what is it that we supposedly did? And how did you come to this conclusion that we did this? And is there any evidence other than your repressed memories that this happened? And if she says, well, they're cocked, of course there's not going to be any evidence. I was only 6 years old. Nobody would know. Nobody knew. And if we say there's no way we did that, would you then trust your repressed memories more than you trust us? Or do you think we're just lying to you? Because now we got two sins. We did it, and we're lying about it. Both of us, Dad and I. Hopefully, if this didn't happen, and in most repressed memory cases, I'm highly suspicious that they did, she'll come to the conclusion that she was mistaken. Unfortunately, it's been my experience that repressed memories come to the surface almost always in therapy. They don't come to the surface any other way, at least my experience has been. You think a little bit they'd pop up with an association, or they'd pop up with some kind of parallel memory, or they would pop up because of some kind of attachment to a person, place, or thing, and then the memory would pop up. But much of the time, if not most of the time, they come up in therapy. And again, I think it would be a fair question to wonder, is this therapist only seeing this in your daughter, or does this therapist specialize in repressed memories? That's another thing about us mental health types. What we specialize in, we tend to see lots of, meaning we diagnose it, we find it. Doesn't necessarily always come to us, but we discover it because, well, that's our specialty.
With Teresa Tomeo.
The AP is now saying that news people cannot refer to pregnancy resource centers as pregnancy resource centers or crisis pregnancy centers. They have to refer to them as anti-abortion centers because we're misleading the public by saying that they're offering resources, apparently. It is about consistently putting forth a culture of death, do anything you want sexually, being extremely woke every time you turn around. This is more proof that all they care about is their own agenda. And they're doing this to their own demise. If you look at the ratings, for example, of CNN, if you look at the subscription rates, right, of various newspapers, whether it's online or still hard copy and in print, continuing to decrease. And yet they do not care because it's about the agenda.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
What are the theological virtues? The Catholic Catechism tells us they are the foundation of Christian moral activity. Infused into our souls by God, they enable us to act as God's children and merit eternal life. The three theological virtues are faith, hope, and charity. Faith is the virtue by which we believe in God and all that He has said and revealed to us, as well as what the Church has proposed for our belief, because God is truth itself. The Apostle James, however, reminds us that faith without works is dead. A disciple of Christ, says the Catechism, must also be willing to profess and spread the faith. Our Lord said, "So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven." This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Did you ever notice the paradox in life? The idea of living a long life appeals to everybody. But the idea of getting old doesn't appeal to anybody. So how do you live a long life without getting old? Notice that? I want to live a long life. Yeah, but that means you're going to get old. I don't want to get old. So what you're saying is you want to live a long life at age 28 or 35 or 42. Well, yeah. All right. E-Person Monday. Let's see what we got here. I watch you on EWTN all the time. I'm a teacher. But I've been taking care of my 87-year-old mom with no help. I don't have any brothers or sisters. My parents were divorced when I was very little. I cook, clean, shop, do laundry, get her medicines, make all her doctor's appointments, hair, etc. I don't have one relative who really cares. My mother has a little bit of dementia. So I imagine she's on the front end of dementia. She's 87, not all that unusual. And an undiagnosed bipolar type of disorder that causes her to become violent sometimes. Okay, well, it's undiagnosed. We don't really know it's a bipolar type of disorder. It could just simply be that's what she does sometimes. Don't have to have some name on it. She will say very mean things to me, like, I'm worthless. I ruined her life, and that I'm going to die alone because God's going to punish me. I guess for how bad she is, I suppose. She also breaks things and sometimes hits me. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not unusual for one adult child to take care of an aging parent, even when, excuse me, even when there are siblings. It's not unusual at all. And I had on the TV show once two sisters who run a skilled care facility. And they said more often than not, it is the eldest daughter who takes that role. But you have no siblings, so you're all alone. Now, when you said no relatives will help, I'm going to assume you're talking about your mother's siblings, maybe some nieces and nephews, cousins, a few more distant type relatives who are essentially saying, I'll tell you what, let her do it. Let the teacher do it. We don't have to get involved in all that. My opinion, you don't need. It doesn't matter that I'm saying this to you. And I furthermore wish it didn't matter. Because I would want you to believe this with or without me saying anything. And that is, what you are doing for your mother is godly. It is a reflection of who you are and what you believe through Christ. All that you're doing to help her, and you know as well as I do, her time here is limited. All that you're doing to help her is heroic. You are taking care of this woman. The fact that she is difficult makes it even more heroic. However, she says things. She insults you, screams at you, yells at you. Now, here's where you do need me to say something. You ready? That is meaningless. Dr. Reed, how can you say that? That's my mother. I care what she thinks. Well, if she is on the front end of dementia, then probably should take into account that some of her governor is slipping. That's one. If you say, well, no, my mom's always been kind of hostile. My mom's always sort of put me down. Now she's just becoming more blatant about it. Okay. However, it still can be meaningless. It really doesn't matter what she thinks because you're doing what is good. It makes what you're doing even better that she's not applauding you. You're doing it. You're doing it. Why? Because you're taking care of this woman with all of her difficulties and all of the history you've had with her, but you're still, in her final years, doing something that our Lord, I am sure, is going to be good and faithful servant applauding. Now, she breaks things and sometimes hits me. Now, if she's never done that before, then you got to really think the dementia is starting to really kick in. Get out of the way when she's hitting you. Leave if you have to, or you're stronger than she is. Don't let her hit you. Block it. If she breaks things, is she throwing them? Or is she just frustrated and breaking things? As long as you're not at risk, you just have to look at it as part of her aging process. If indeed she wasn't like this when she was younger. But if she was, then all you're just seeing is her personality continuing through the years. I think the key, there's two takeaways here, both very important. One, what you're doing is absolutely, I think, God ordained. I am so impressed with somebody who sacrifices so much of themselves to take care of an aging parent, especially a really difficult, hard-to-like aging parent. Keep in mind, either way, you're probably not going to have to do it much longer because she's either going to get older and become more unpredictable and harder to manage and have to go into a facility, or she may have health problems that will eventually take her life. She's 87. The fact that nobody else is helping you, maybe that says a lot about where they are in their walk with Christ. You got to feel sorry for them, really, because if this neglect of this 87-year-old relative is any indication of their self-centeredness, then that's got to be part of their lives. I mean, at the very least they could say to you, hey, let's help you out and get some people to come in a little bit, and we'll all chip in money and pay for some in-home care, you know, 20 hours a week or something. We could all do that. We got money. But if that's not happening, that's really telling you something. But don't bemoan it. And then the third thing is, this is critical. Don't give credibility to anything she says. A person that's rational and reasonable, whether they're on the front end of dementia or whether they're not, is not going to vilely attack somebody who is sustaining them. They're not. So that tells you either your mom is getting further into the dementia, or she's just an individual who sadly has a personality that is disagreeable and ungrateful.
There's going to be conflict. I want to make that clear. My concern is unity, but I don't think you can get to unity before you get to the conflict. And you have to remember, the church is not supposed to be submissive to the state. It's not supposed to be the ruler over the state, but it's supposed to be the conscience of the state. And if you ever wrestled with your conscience, you know, conscience creates conflict. So we expect conflict between the church and the surrounding culture, especially with the political order. We expect conflict among fellow Christians because we will assess the various importance of issues differently. But here's what's supposed to work. Our union in Christ is supposed to keep us bonded together so that these fights can be handled and they can be fruitful. Not the kind of conflict that drives separation. They can be fruitful conflict.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
I'm angry, frustrated. Sound like you? Someone you know? Well, it could be any of us from time to time. But there's different types of anger. It's not so cut and dry. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. One thing is for sure, you don't need to suffer with anger frustration. In my book, Living Calm, Mastering Anger and Frustration, you'll learn whether your anger is a product of your nature or your nurture, and how to regulate those emotions and those thoughts. You can get Living Calm and all my other books at AveMariaRadio.net.
This program is brought to you in part by MyLifeAngels.com. MyLifeAngels provides peace of mind by notifying you the moment a loved one enters an emergency room. Right on your smartphone, you'll have instant access to everything needed, including all legal documents, to ensure you are empowered to protect their life-affirming wishes. MyLifeAngels also alerts hospital ER staff with critical medical information and emergency contacts. More information at MyLifeAngels.com.
Very nice to be with you. I'm Dr. Ray Grady. The program here, The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. My producer, man, Andrew Krucek, over there in the Ave Maria Studios in Ann Arbor. Excuse me. Okay. Now, you can tell, if I don't say another word, that this is written from a guy. Here's how it starts off. 4.5-year-old girl. That's how it starts off. It's not Hi, Dr. Ray. I'm writing you because we have a 4.5-year-old girl. No, it's just 4.5-year-old girl. No verbs. Actually, that's kind of the way I write. He also says, have a 6-year-old girl and a 2-year-old boy with another due in February. So, whoa, they're going to have 4 under 6. Pretty good. Pretty busy. And for sure, moving into the realm of getting societal abuse. Do you know how this is happening? Don't you have a TV? People think they're so clever. And they also think they have a right to comment on anybody who has more than 1.86 children. And all the evidence is pointing to, in the coming decades, a population implosion. Not an explosion, because these supposedly so smart people who said, we're going to run out of everything because we're going to have too many people and we can't sustain it. Yeah, well, they're not God. And they didn't see all the way ahead that people are going to stop having kids for all kinds of reasons. And that's what's happening. So that anybody that has more than, well, you're allowed 3 if you have 2 girls first and 2 boys first. Well, you're trying for your boy, aren't you? But then, Lord help you, if you have a 3rd girl or 3rd boy, well, are you done now? You know what we used to say? Kids say, are these all your children? I'd go, oh, no. The oldest is at home with the triplets. 4.5-year-old girl, Dr. Ray, nothing seems to faze her or motivate her into making the right choices. Now, this is a variant of the old, we've tried everything, nothing works. I'd say I hear that 70% of the time when a parent comes into my office talking about any age child who doesn't seem to be responding quick enough to discipline. I have been clear and consistent on expectations. I practice them. I ask her questions to check for understanding. I've taken things away. I've offered rewards. And in the end, she does what she wants, even when she knows it's wrong. Okay. Dad, if you're doing all the things you're saying, then keep doing them. What are you saying? Well, you're saying at age 4.5, she still misbehaves. A lot. Dad, I got a question for you. 1, how old are you? 2, do you go to confession? And 3, do you pretty much say the same sins every time? Why are you still doing that? Why haven't you learned? How many times older than your daughter are you? 8 times? 10 times older? You're still doing it? So at age 4.5, we're going, she's just not getting this. Well, okay. Then you've got a little girl. It's going to take more in consistency, more in supervision, more in follow through than you thought. Now, my guess would be, I'll bet you, that your 6-year-old girl never did any of this. Your 6-year-old girl responded much better to discipline, much more naturally cooperative, much more pleasant, much more mature. And you're thinking, okay, I'm God's gift to parenthood. This is easy. And then Sybil comes along. Remember that old movie? And it throws you for a loop. Now, here is the operative statement that tells me I think I'm right in my assessment of all this. I feel like I have to get mean and angry just to get her attention. Yeah, that's another one I hear. By the way, both of these are dealt with directly in my book, Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. I have to get mad and then she listens. No, you're training her. You're training her to only respond when you reach a certain decibel level or a certain emotional peak. Your power is in your consequence, not your mouth. Now, there's good news and bad news here, Dad. I don't know your situation. But I think the good news is, and I'm going to tell you this, that when parents come into my office describing what you describe, and I've heard it, oh, I don't know, probably 1.5 million times maybe. Yeah, thereabouts, somewhere in there. Either 5 or 1.5 million. They think they're incredibly consistent. They think that they have just been so good with the discipline, the follow-through. And some of them have. It's a minority. Because I start to question them about their style. And lo and behold, they're nowhere near as consistent in follow-through as they think. One of the things I do is I ask them. I say, okay, your 4.5-year-old daughter, if you said, please go to the corner. Just like that. One time. Calm tone of voice. Would she? Now, I would say about 90% of the parents who come in my office who think they're really good disciplinarians say no, she wouldn't. Well, I'd have to take her there, or I'd have to yell, or she'd argue with me, or she'd come out, or she'd throw a fit, or she'd kick the corner. In other words, it wouldn't be cooperation. It would be some level of brawl. Then I say to the parent, well, then you don't have authority. And if you don't have authority, if you don't have quiet authority, you're right. You're right. You're going to get tested. You're going to get pushed on. That's just going to happen. So use that as one question, Dad. If you say, please go to the corner when she does something wrong, just like that, please go to the corner. Five words, 80 decibels, nothing higher. That's pretty high. And she goes and she stands. Well, you're in good shape. You got this thing licked, because over time she'll learn doing certain things have consequences. My parents love me very much, but when I act out of line, they're going to do something about it each and every time, and I was in the corner 8 times yesterday. Okay. If you don't have that, well, that's also good news, because it means your daughter's probably not as tough as you think she is, and part of this lies in the dynamics. For those that are not as tough with her as we are, they have even more issues with her. If it's not me, okay, meaning Dad, or her teacher, okay, why does she obey her teacher? Why? Teacher doesn't have any authority. Very little. Why does she obey the teacher? She will do everything she can to test boundaries. Okay, so you got a kid who pushes. She acts like she thrives on only negative attention. I wouldn't think that. No, parents say that all the time. I think she acts up to get attention. No, they don't act up to get attention. They act up to get what they want, and then they get the negative attention. My wife and I are both teachers and get to spend plenty of time with the kids. She gets plenty of one-on-one time with me also. One of her big things now is to throw a fit when being dropped off at school by my wife, only to be fine seconds after she leaves. See, Dad, that's another good sign. If she's fine seconds after she leaves, she's got a lot of self-control here. She's just doing this because your wife, for whatever the reason, in her little 4.5-year-old mind, is a signal. It's like, okay, well, I do this. I do this to Mom. Now, see, my question would be, if you were in my office, I would say, okay, so on a day when she throws a fit like that, when she comes home that night, what do? Do you tell her, you know, sweetheart, you're going to go to bed early, and pretty much everything you ask for is going to be no, because you didn't need to throw a fit today. Now, if you do that, I'll bet you within 3 days you won't have any fits anymore. And he closes with, as if she is putting on some act only to be upset all over again when time to pick her up. Yeah, well, she may be. You may have a kid who pushes harder than your 6-year-old and even your 2-year-old. Okay, they all vary in how hard they push. And what happens is we develop bad habits. And because of our bad habits, and I'm not saying you're not a good parent, you're probably a very good parent, but you underestimate the time it may take and the consistency it may take and the follow through and the consequences it may take to bring this little one under decent control. I wrote a book called Taught by 10. My kids are grown now. My 10 children are adopted. Some of my children have absolutely horrific beginnings. Drug exposure in the womb, alcohol exposure in the womb, neglect, nasty stuff. That should, according to the research, make them very difficult to raise. Now, I'll admit, some of them were difficult to raise in the sense that they were slower to form consciences, they were slower to get self-control. What you're describing, we never had. Is this because we're such great parents? Nah, my wife's a far better parent than I am. Because it was real clear we were not going to allow this kind of behavior. Real clear. Now, I know you're thinking, we don't either. I believe you, up to a point. But what is clear to me is if a 4.5-year-old is driving you crazy, 90%+ of the time, there is more you can do to tone this whole situation down. I'm telling you that. I'm saying that not because I know you, but because I've dealt with so many similar situations. So that's the good news. Want a book that'll help you? Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. It's on my website. 100 of the most common discipline questions I get asked, ages 2 to 18, and everything you said in here was addressed in that book. Particularly, how to get one-time compliance, please go to the corner. I'm Dr. Ray.
Don't touch that dial. Dr. Ray will be back.
Hi, friends. Jonet Williams here. Join me every Wednesday on Women of Grace Live as I welcome New Age researcher and blogger for Women of Grace, Sue Brinkman. Sue and I will be talking about all the wacky things that could distract you from your faith. Psychics, yoga, Reiki, crystals, acupuncture, Ouija boards, tarot cards, and astral traveling are just a few of the stranger things we discuss. That's why we call it Wacky Wednesday. So join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
The following is a medical moment.
Hi, I'm Bobby Schindler, brother of Terry Schiavo. In 2005, my sister experienced a brain injury, leaving her unable to speak for herself and make her own decisions regarding medical care. Since she had not established a healthcare agent by creating a healthcare durable power of attorney, the courts decided to leave the medical decisions to Michael, Terry's husband. Because of this, Michael was able to remove Terry's food and water, dehydrating and starving her to death by court order. There are many reasons why someone may need a feeding tube, such as an illness or injury that leaves a patient with difficulty swallowing. Usually, feeding tubes are short-term solutions until the patient can swallow on their own. St. Pope John Paul II clarified that food and water by tube is basic care owed to patients and not a medical act. We never know when you or a loved one may be faced with an injury. I urge you to have a conversation with your family and to identify a healthcare agent to make sure your life wishes are known, and to take the step of finalizing a healthcare power of attorney. It could very well save your lives.
This medical moment brought to you by MyLifeAngels.com.
Would you get on a plane that doesn't have a pilot? Investing in passive index mutual funds may present the same issue. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds are actively managed by seasoned investment professionals to help you meet your investment goals in a morally responsible way. Ave Maria funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors could invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Talk just a little bit more about a 4.5-year-old who is just not seeming to learn. First of all, 4.5-year-old is very young to get all this. I expect 4.5-year-olds to misbehave a lot. They're 4.5. And of course, some 4.5-year-olds are going to misbehave a lot more than others. It's who they are. Their nature. It's not pathological. Just the kind of kid they are. They will push. That requires the parent to be stronger. And interestingly enough, most parents who come into my office, I would say 75% of them, think that they're very strong. They think that this child is just absolutely brutal, tough, strong-willed, mind of her own, oppositional, defiant, 6 going on 16. They think this until we start talking and I start asking questions. The one that shakes them is the one I mentioned right before the break. If you told this child, please go to the corner, what you did is wrong, please go to the corner, what would happen? When you have a parent saying, this kid drives me crazy, this kid's a behavior problem, almost always there is no way that kid goes to the corner without a fight, without resistance. Almost always. And I point out to the parent, well, that means this is how the child views your authority. This is not necessarily who the child is. This is how the child views your authority. You don't have the authority to tell me to go to the corner without me resisting you and making you get mad and making you put me there and making you get all flustered. You don't have that ability. I'm surprised at how many parents lose that when a child is 2, 3, and 4. They don't have it. Sometimes they never even establish it. So they'll come in when the kid's 9 and they've never had it. And consequently, what happens is the child who may be by nature pushes a little harder now really looks bad. Really. Because he's learned this is how I interact with my parents. If they want me to do something I don't want to do, there's going to be a fight here. And the parent naturally thinks, look at what this child is like. You see this? Look at this. When in fact, the good news is, much of the time, that's not what the child is like. As a matter of fact, if we work together and they follow through on some of the things we talk about, I always, not always, 80% here, within 2 sessions, it's like I'm living with a different child. I don't know who this is. He's so much more pleasant, so much more cooperative, so much happier, so much more affectionate. I go, well, wait a minute. You said he was very strong-willed. Where'd it go? Because, see, he was strong-willed with them. And Tyler said the teacher has no problems with his child. So where did all that pushiness go? If this kid is naturally pushy, when she finds out that this is the way the adult's going to respond to me, then I'm not going to do it. Well, then that really raises the questions of how strong-willed she is. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it so very much. My producer, man, Andrew Krucek, over there at Ave and EWTN and their 600 affiliates. How cool is that? This is Dr. Ray. Walk with God. Hold that little 4.5-year-old by the hand. Don't get bit.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating 2,000 years of truth. This is the Guadalupe Radio Network. Radio for your soul.
Are you aware that the devil has a plan for your marriage just as God does? He has no desire for the success of your marriage. He doesn't want the two of you to help each other get to heaven. But instead, he instigates each of you to lead the other straight to hell through self-centeredness, materialism, and apathy. Jeremiah gives us God's plan, saying, "For surely I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your welfare and not for harm, to give you a future with hope. You have a choice of whose plan you will follow. One brings misery, pain, and eternal damnation. The other, well, it's called the sacrament of matrimony, and it comes with a golden treasure chest full of grace. Call on the grace of your sacrament. It's all you need to have a future of hope in this life and in the next." This has been a minute for your marriage and family from the Three Hearts Institute. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Parler.
Doc, where are you taking this car?
Great Scott, Marty! The Guadalupe Radio Network is saving so many souls, and by donating this car, it helps their future!
And it's a great tax deduction!
Yes! Just call 1-866-628-2277 or go to grnonline.com and click on Donate!
That's heavy!
No, Marty! Not heavy! It's charitable! Flux capacitor not included!
Hello, this is Steve Gleason with your 1-Minute Tool for Catholic Evangelism. Here's the question for your non-Catholic friend. What's the primary reason you chose your present church? Doctrinal positions, your family's church, the pastor, church friendliness, dynamic youth ministry? Well, here's your 3 best friendship tools for Catholic evangelism. Number 1, statistics. A survey showed that 87% of those who attend a non-Catholic church choose their church because of the senior pastor's sermons. Secondly, the reason for Catholics. This comes from Canon Law 518, which says, as a general rule, a parish is to be one which includes all the Christian faithful of a certain territory. And thirdly, my response. The average span of a mature Christian staying at a non-denominational church is between 18 and 24 months. Why such a short time? You know the reason. They came because we love the pastor and his sermons. He's so relatable and so current. Whoops, now they're tired of relatable and current, so just go down the street. They found some new relatable and current. Oh, the alluring draw of charisma. Fortunately, at a Catholic church, the sermon is not the central moment. Do you know what is the central moment? Body and blood.
KATH 910 AM, Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth.